Good morning, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order. Time is 9 a.m., February 25, 2025. Excused today are Senator Hoffman and Senator Olson. With us today is Senator Keel, Senator Merrick, Senator Cronk, Senator Kaufman, and myself, Stedman. I'll be filling in for Senator Hoffman today and tomorrow and the next day. We have one item on the agenda today. We've invited the Department of Transportation to come before the Finance Committee, their favorite committee, they always say, so I appreciate that. The Commissioner, Ryan Anderson, if he can come forward, he could bring up his deputies as he sees fit as he walks through the presentation today. We have quite a lengthy presentation, and we could get bogged down in different districts for the entire 2 hours, the different regions of the state. So we'll try to move through some of these slides as quick as we can so we can get get through the whole presentation today and then talk about a few other things. But the concentration today will be some of the challenges with the statewide transportation plan and how we are planning to move forward. So with that, Mr. Commissioner, I see you have a trusty deputy with you, so you can introduce yourself for the record, and then she can introduce herself, and then we'll go into your presentation.
Okay. Thank you, Co-Chair Stedman. For the record, my name is Ryan Anderson. I'm the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities Commissioner.
And good morning. For the record, Catherine Keith, Deputy Commissioner with the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities.
Okay. If we may proceed.
Yes. And just before we get going, I think today it'd be more beneficial rather than we've had hearings on this at the Transportation Committee. We have several hearings coming up in the Budget Subcommittee dealing with DOT, which all members of the committee are invited to attend, all of them or some of them as they see fit. We're going to try to figure out today's point out some of the challenges the department has and try to see if we can help them with solutions to move our projects forward.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Stedman. Yeah, I mean, first of all, definitely recognize that this is a fairly long slide deck, and we acknowledge that, you know, we've been told no fluffy stuff. We were going to bring the five things that DOT accomplished this past week, but we decided we'll just keep this going. So with that, we'll start out with, first, I appreciate all of you on this committee. We recognize the expertise here, so with this presentation, we'll be sure to move through things quickly, knowing that all of you are familiar with DOT and how we work. What we've been asked for is really an update on the statewide transportation improvement program, a construction outlook for this next year, which has been something that's been a big topic for us, a deferred maintenance discussion, and then our FY26 operating and capital requests. So with that, we'll move right into the first slide regarding the STIP.
For the record, this is Catherine Keith. Well, one of the five things that we did accomplish this last week was we put out the Statewide Transportation Improvement Program for public comment. This is our STIP Amendment 2. This is online and open for public comment until March 20th. So this amendment incorporates changes as a result of communications through... Okay, thank you. Radio check. Okay. So this amendment includes changes to formatting of our fiscal constraint tables. It includes a review of eligibility of fund types and some changes there based on conversations with our federal partners. There are changes to project costs and some changes in the years in which projects occur. So I just encourage everyone to take a look at the STIP and then leave comments, please, on the new platform, which has seen a big upgrade. It's a ESRI, a GIS-based platform. But what it has that it didn't have before is this ability to review and compare Amendment 1 to Amendment 2. So that was feedback that we had gotten. There was a lot of changes between versions. So now you can just look online, scroll through the projects, and there's a red arrow or a green arrow for the level of funding. And if there's a change to scope language, project language, it's called out. So hopefully this makes it an easier review for everybody. And we'll talk more as we go on about the projects and programs within the STIP. But our formula funding every year amounts to about $850 million. And then in addition to that, from federal highways funds, we have either unspent funds that are from previous years that carry over into this fiscal year. We have Federal Transit Administration funds. Those formula funds that we get every year are roughly $85 million. Those are funds that come into the department for the railroad, for the municipalities of Anchorage and Fairbanks area for transit services, as well as the Mat-Su borough. And then in addition to that, we program discretionary grants that are either Title 23 or Title 49. Funded. So all of that gets rolled into our program. So this STIP overall has $6.9 billion programmed over the 4 years. We're going to talk a lot about our Federal Highways and Federal Transit Administration funds, but our aviation program is a huge part of our delivery. In FY24, we received approximately $305 million, and that was in funding from entitlements, discretionary programs, grants, and you'll see that in our projects in FY25 that we'll go through as far as what's delivered. Those funds are not programmed in our STIP. Instead, they're programmed in our Alaska Capital Improvement Program, our ACIP. So this slide has a QR code. So if anyone is watching this presentation, you can scan a picture of that and access our statewide transportation improvement program. Of the $6.9 billion that I mentioned we have programmed over 4 years, there's over $1.05 billion in discretionary grants. And those are grants through Federal Highways, U.S. Department Transportation Office of the Secretary, as well as Federal Transit Administration. So $1.5 billion. We have $3.6 billion of those funds are for construction. And $396 million, about a little bit over 10% of that, is for pre-construction activities. Altogether, we have 303 individual STIP IDs that you can look up throughout that program. And there's 189 of these individual projects. So you can look up the project, and that's exactly what you'll see hitting the street. But we also have programs. There's 80 of these programs that encompass sometimes one or two projects, and sometimes there can be over 100 projects within a program. So when you're looking at it, you have to they're in different sections, so it should be pretty easy to see which is which. And I think move on. So this amendment number two is a roll-up of a lot of work over the past couple years, beginning with our initial approved STIP, which was March 27th of this year. Moving forward, and I apologize, this date is wrong on the upper left-hand corner to correct this. Our STIP, 2024-2027 STIP, was approved March 27th, 2024. We had a lot of dialogue with our federal partners over the following 6 months, and that includes stakeholder meetings as well, meetings with our Metropolitan Planning Organization partners, our MPOs, and others, that led into our amendment number one, which was September 26th of 2024. And in that amendment, it was a massive resolution of a lot of items that were brought to our attention in federal planning findings that we received after submittal of our original STIP, the 2024-2027 STIP. So we worked over those following 6 months. We submitted Amendment 1 and obtained resolution of 10 out of the 14 items that they had originally called out. So after that, there were still some things that we've had ongoing discourse with that brought the department, some of our staff, over to Federal Highways and Federal Transit in Washington, D.C. to talk about some of these outstanding issues. Commissioner Anderson's going to talk about that here in a minute. But we've continued to evolve these discussions, and what came out of that One of the outcomes of that meeting in Washington, D.C. was the request of both agencies to review our next amendment early. So we had provided them with a draft version about a month ago, 6 weeks ago, and our staff had been meeting with those agencies on an iterative basis, leading to the release of this public comment version. So a large amount of these items have been resolved and incorporated in Amendment Number 2, and there are still items that they've requested that we incorporate, but those will take a little bit more of a programmatic shift, and we'll be working on those as we roll out our next STIP, which will be the 2025 to 2028 STIP. So I apologize for another correction in January 2026. But the next rolling STIP will be 2025 to 2028. And so we look forward to having any outstanding concerns with our formatting or the way that we're programming projects at that time also. I think with that, happy to answer any questions, or we can move on.
Could you help the committee a little bit with how the STIP is staffed? Yeah. Historically, we've had an employee that his main job was just the transportation plan. How is it structured now within DOT?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Stedman. Yeah, we have a large number of positions across the department that either have a primary role with the statewide or STIP, or they have a supporting role. Right now, when we've prepared lists before, we've been communicating that we've had 30 people that were very, very much involved with the development of the original STIP. Since then, though, it's broadened significantly. So the positions that work on our STIP include transportation planners, our pre-construction engineers, all of our project managers.
So let me rephrase the question.
Thank you.
Several years ago, Jeff Audison was an employee of DOT. His main role was doing the STIP. Who's in charge of the STIP?
Yeah, Chair Stedman, this is where we get into, we're not trying to not answer the question, but we actually have three main divisions of the department that all have division directors that have sole responsibilities with our STIP. Because of the fact that there's a few major components with this document. One is the fiscal constraint, the budgetary components of that. So our director, Dom Pannone, with program management and administration, leads that part. He's in charge of that part. Then we have our chief engineer, who runs project delivery division. So the scopes, the schedules, the budgets, the cost estimates, she's in charge of that component. That's where all of our transportation planners fall under. Then lastly, we have our Data Modernization and Innovation Office, DMIO. Our director there oversees the GIS components, the digital data pieces, the public comment. So all of those report to both myself as Deputy Commissioner and Commissioner Anderson for overall approval of this document. The STIP is too big for just one person to be in charge of it, so it does take a team, and that's the approach that we've taken over the past couple years.
Correct. That's one of the concerns we have had. We've had some challenges with the STIP that we hadn't seen before, and I recognize that some of the employees were spent many years at DOT and were very, very knowledgeable, and there's been employee turnover, and So I think that's been some of the challenges possibly, and maybe you could get back to the committee on the management of the STIP structure the last several years so we can be better informed of the iterations of that. Mr. Commissioner.
Yeah, Chair Stedman, if I could, for the record, Ryan Anderson. The STIP is a different animal now than it was in the Jeff Audison days. I think if you go back and look at the past historical STIPs and the number of pages and what was happening there and then how these federal programs have gotten a lot more complicated, what the federal government has been requiring of us over the past year and a half as we've developed a new STIP, is a whole different thing than what you know we had experienced previously. So there is that factor to consider too. But not to say that Mr. Audison was a very talented man, and you know, I was always respected and thought he was always admired him. But I think ultimately the STIP has always rested with the commissioner. I think that's how it's written in statute, and that's always that's kind of the end place there.
So. And we recognize that Mr. Audison worked under the commissioner. There's no question about that. Senator Keel.
Well, thanks, Mr. Chairman. I guess I, having a little trouble tracking. It's bigger and vastly more complex. But I think Jeff had 50 people. And I think, Deputy Commissioner, I heard you say we're up to about 30 folks working on it. So I guess I'm having trouble squaring the circle there. But the bigger question I have is, Mr. Chairman, I think I heard the Deputy Commissioner say that we've got some outstanding issues with the feds who approved the STIP, and we expect to have them resolved for the 25-28 document. Do we not expect to have the problems with the feds resolved for the amendment that we have out right now?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Keel. Yeah, thank you. That's a great question. We do expect a fully approved STIP amendment number 2. And, you know, we'll continue to work with our partners over the next month while we have this public comment happening to resolve any issues. The ones that I mentioned that are outstanding are more high-level programmatic items that together our agencies would like to see done differently. One example is how we program our parent and child projects. If you've looked much at our projects, sometimes we'll have a major corridor as a parent project, and we can do pre-construction environmental activities under one program, one project, and we'll break out projects and construction in stages. There's not many states that do it that way, and it's confusing to the public, and the programming is nuanced. So we'd like to work on that in upcoming months to simplify that and see what we can do to make it more efficient. So that's an example. So we have things that we'd like to work on collectively, but that isn't something that we're going to resolve in this initial item. And it's not called out as a finding, but there are things that we'd like to continue to improve upon.
Okay. Okay. Next slide, please.
Okay, for the record, Ryan Anderson. So this kind of goes back to Senator Keel's questions about how we're working with the federal government right now. And one thing we would like to just say is, you know, we absolutely work with our federal partners, but we also have to, you know, make sure that we're caring for the state of Alaska and Alaskans in our transportation program, and that, you know, we're standing up when we feel like, you know, there's a difference in interpretation of federal law and regulations. And this was a case where, you know, we're very heavily consulting with our Department of Law. We have very experienced transportation attorneys who were telling us, hey, what's going on here? When we had some of these findings isn't right. And so when we got through Amendment 1 and we continue to have the findings, and I don't know if folks have read those findings, but, you know, we were not happy with them. I think the way things were stated it wasn't conducive. And so, you know, we made our statement on that, but then we did take that extra step to go to Washington, D.C. and ask to meet with, you know, the heads of the Washington, D.C. headquarters folks at both FTA and FHWA, and they obliged. There were about 16 Federal Highways FTA folks there, including our Alaska Division staff. There was 4 State of Alaska employees, including myself, Deputy Commissioner Keith, Director Pannone, and a Department of Law. And we stated our case. And it was 2 4-hour meetings that we went through this. And what came out of that was one of the projects that the Federal Highway Administration had rejected, the Richardson Highway Milepost 346, they had stated that it was within the MPO boundary and to a certain respect. We disagreed on their interpretation, and when we elevated it, we got that project approved. So that came out of the findings, and they gave us a letter on that. On the Safer Seward Highway, that's a project where we've had a disagreement, you know, with the MPO and FHWA about NHS routes and the state's authority, planning authority on NHS routes. What we were told in that case, because part of that project does go through the MPO and the MPO vetoed the project, was that, you know, we're better off just changing the termini to keep it out of the MPO for now until this gets resolved, because they didn't have a clear answer for us on that. When we went down to, there were a lot of must statements that they said, yeah, if FHWA says must, that's true, that's something you have to do. But they said when they say should, and that was 38 statements, they were clear that should statements should not be in the planning findings. And then, of course, we had a lot of discussion about MPO engagement and how we should work through that when we're in this area of controversy and there is no clear, you know, conflict resolution path. And then also discretionary grants. We had included many discretionary grants because they weren't included in any other federal funding transportation plan. And, you know, We stated our case. We've come to resolution on that in terms of we're taking things out of our STIP. with the understanding that the Fed Highway Administration is going to put them in their respective plans, so the local communities that have those grants are still covered and can obligate the funds.
Okay, and then maybe touch on advanced construction. We've had some escalation in that and some concerns and then some diminishment of that dollar amount. Could you help us with that?
Yeah, Chair Stedman, could I go to the next slide?
Yes.
So when we get into the construction program, and this is, I think, where we can talk about these current events that are happening, you know, really there's been a huge focus on DOT and what we're delivering this summer. We had a four-hour meeting with the Association of General Contractors yesterday with good outcomes. We made it real clear where DOT was at, how we're doing on project delivery. One of the things that comes up, as Co-Chair Stedman mentioned, was the advanced construct, where we can, in Alaska, well, in any state, you have a tool where you can, if you can't fit a project within your fiscal constraint of the STIP, you can basically borrow from future years to get the construction going now and then pay for it in future years. And so in Alaska, we've done that in over history, and we can provide the committee with those, you know, historical AC amounts. And so our authorization of AC is about right now in the range of $400 million. That's what we have out there, that we have projects going on, but we haven't actually convert, you know, we haven't put the money into those projects. They're under construction, and it's a future obligation to the state that we'll pay for. About a year and a half ago, we increased that balance about I think it was between $550 and $600 million. And with that, we got into this discussion about what is that threshold for Alaska and advanced construction. I mean, are we comfortable with $400 million and carrying that balance? Because you can revolve this fund where you pay it down and then you can add more to it. The advantages for the state in advanced construction is that, you know, if we have projects that are shelf ready, basically they're ready to go, but they're not in that fiscally constrained STIP, and we want to get them going quickly, we have an ability to move things around and manage the funds based on what's shovel ready, because projects slip sometimes. So discussions there, we did go through a concerted effort over the past year to pay that down, and we got it back down to about $400 million. So we constantly go through this. And so it comes up in these discussions with contractors and whatnot of what's that threshold? Because we could put more work on the street by increasing our AC balance over what is currently programmed. And that's been a big topic.
Okay. Go ahead.
And thank you. Through the chair, Commissioner Ryan, just wondering about this as far as the $15 million currently advertising, and just wondering how that squares with being on pace for getting the work out. As y'all know, we've gotten a lot of questions from people who are really concerned about not optimizing the construction season because of what's being seen by some as a delay in getting these out. Can you characterize that with respect to the total goal if you're looking at what we're trying to get done versus what's been put on the street?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Kaufman. Yeah, great question. So this tentative advertised schedule has been something that's been a big focus for us, and I think we have a slide here on that as well. But really, it's a constantly revolving schedule where, you know, projects get ready. So there's this process we go through. The engineers work and they complete the designs. The environmental professionals complete the environmental utilities. Right-of-way all gets completed. And then once that package is completed, DOT certifies it. And then it goes to our Fed Aid folks to make sure we get all the fund types and all the funding squared away on it. And then it goes to Federal Highways for approval. Once it comes back on the highway side from Federal Highways for approval, then we can advertise it. So you'll see this constant rotation. Right now, yeah, I think $15 million is my guess. That's the current advertising. I'll go with that number. But it could have changed today. We have some big projects that are going through that process right now. And from what our if you look at the tentative advertised list and what we're projecting over the next 2 months, there's a significant amount of work. I mean, I want to say it was over $200 million worth of work between now and May. So we absolutely are paying attention. We are taking steps to accelerate projects so that we can get some of these projects that are simpler like our preventative maintenance or those paving projects, get those moved up and get them on the street. That's what we heard from the Association of General Contractors yesterday, was really that's their primary concern right now, is just work on the street before the construction season so that they have that ability to keep their backlogs up and keep people to work. So we're 100%, you know, taking steps to do that.
Senator Keel.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, I appreciate 100% taking steps. Well, maybe you could give us a percentage on your confidence interval. I think, as you said, the next this month and the next two, engineers' estimates about $160 to $280 million worth of work in your tentative advertising schedule. What's your confidence level that those get bid according to the tentative advertising schedule?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Keel. You know, our staff actually put together a list of the projects and then a kind of a confidence level ranking that we presented to the Association of General Contractors yesterday. That probably is the best way to look at it. So we could provide that to the committee so you can kind of see what that looks like from our teams, you know, that are working on these things every day. I mean, I have confidence in our teams. There's a lot of hard work going on. And remember, our teams aren't just DOT staff. I mean, these are contract consultants. And so, you know, we're finding, you know, these struggles that we have with delivery, they're not just, you know, a DOT, but, I mean, these are consultants across the industry that are trying to help us through these things. You'll see on the slide there's some of our issues that we're facing that are challenges. Utilities right now, because of the Build America, Buy America, supply chain issues is a significant factor for us. We have several projects, and we'll go through them here in a bit, but like on the Kenai Peninsula, for example, where we're struggling with utility companies because they're concerned they can't get compliant materials. And until we certify that we can, you know, relocate the utilities while we build the new road, we're not able with federal highways to go forward with that Fed Aid agreement. So we've taken a lot of steps. We're actually, like, for example, on that one, we're taking the conscientious step to say, okay, well, if the utility companies aren't able to take the risk on getting compliant materials, we'll have to put those actions in the actual construction contract and have construction contractors relocating the utilities. It's not ideal for the utility companies, but without that, we're at a point where we don't believe we can move forward with a project. And some of these are, I mean, the one that I'm referring is Kenai Spur Highway, and it's a $50 million project. So we absolutely want to get those going. So we're moving to those type of actions to get through this, and so those that helps, you know, that gets us moving. It puts more things within our control instead of out of our control, and so there'll be a fair amount of that going on here.
Okay. Follow up.
Thanks. I would appreciate the fine-grained confidence, but for the benefit of Alaskans watching legislative hearing, high, medium, low confidence that we'll get the next 2 months, 2.5 months of the stuff on the tentative schedule bid?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Keel. Yeah, I mean, I have confidence in our teams that we're going to do it. So when you look at the tentative advertised list, that's what they have told me. Hey, that's what we can deliver. There may be some that, you know, there's some utility situation or something that we have to, you know, work hard to get overcome. But my direction has been, hey, let's get creative. If we need to take some risk, we can get the attorneys involved, but let's get these on the street. So, yeah, we're going forward confidently. I can say that.
One follow question. It.
Thank you. Slightly different question. Not on your key issues list. I noticed that you talked about the process and the need project by project to get federal highways to give it the check mark. You seeing any newfound staff troubles getting responsiveness from federal highways? Are the cutbacks likely to be another one of these key issues the next time we talk?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Keel. Yeah, good question. You know, right now we've really been tightening up our protocols for, like, our Fed Highway, our Fed Aid team, the folks that actually put the packages together and get them to Fed Highways, because we want to make sure those are absolutely solid. So if Fed Highways is going through this challenge with, you know, reduced staff, which we haven't seen delays yet on that, I will say. But what we have been told is that there are certain fund types where if we send forward projects with certain fund types, let's say carbon reduction, for example, something like that, those are being held, and they may be going to Washington, D.C. for approval. They've also told us that, you know, depending on what's in the scope of our Fed aid request, that certain keywords may also trigger going to Washington, D.C. for approval. So there is more headquarters Washington, D.C. involvement in the reviews. As Deputy Commissioner Keith was talking about the Statewide Transportation Improvement Program, there's also a notice put out that, like, when we do our Amendment 2 and we submit it after public notice and comment to the federal government, that will also probably go to, right now they're going to Washington, D.C. for approval. So there's a whole series of things in that regards, but we haven't seen the delays at this time.
Okay. Next slide, please.
And this is just a quick, and for the record, Ryan Anderson, this is just a quick slide. You know, the real focus on our tentative advertised schedule is, as all of you have been clear today about, really, you know, we put together protocols. In the past, project managers would update the tentative advertised list. The new direction for our staff is, hey, if you have a problem with your project and you feel like you're going to have to delay it, you need to go and talk to your supervisor, then elevate it to the ranks above, because we want to find a solution to that. We don't want to just push things out. So that was some of the changes that we've made just in the past couple months to kind of strengthen that, you know, ability to address these project slippage right now. So that's been a big deal. You know, the other thing, too, just to bring up is as money is released, that's another factor for us in project delivery. The Fed Highways Administration, of course, releases money in tranches over the years, or over the months. And so, you know, we're able to obligate as those become available. And, of course, on the Federal Aviation Administration side of things, you know, that has been a challenge for us because, for example, last year they didn't release funds until August and September. And typically with those grant programs, we don't award contracts until the money's in hand. We've been talking about ways that we could award contracts prior to having the grant and what the risks would be for the state to do that. And so we're in conversations with the Federal Aviation Administration about that. That would be one way to alleviate some of the contracting community concerns we've heard on the aviation side for rural Alaska, is to go ahead and advertise and award contracts prior to getting those grants, with hopefully some assurance from FAA that, you know, the grants, everything's fully reimbursable. So we're going through that process. We do have a grouping of projects that will be shelf ready by April 1st. And so we will have that ability to advertise those projects if we have that comfort factor that we can get reimbursed in the future.
And can you help the committee a little bit with August redistribution? You were talking about, like, the airport's getting run late into the summer, but how does the August redistribution, how has that worked in the past, and what's going on with that?
Yeah, Co-Chair Stedman. So every August, at least over the past, I think it's been going on for 5 to 10 years, there's a distribution of authority or a limitation, I guess I would say. So every year, you know, we get an apportionment from the federal government of a certain amount of funds on the federal highway side, and they're all in all these different fund types. And those fund types have increased as, like, with the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, there's a lot more different types of fund types. And the federal government will give you so much limitation where you can spend to a certain level. When August comes around, there's a distribution of all the limitation from the nation to whoever has projects ready that can use it in the correct, and it has to be in the correct fund types, because what you're doing is you're using money that you already have, because a lot of times they give us more apportionment than limitation. And so this is where things get awkward to talk about. So Alaska, you know, we have this amount of apportionment, but we have a lot of carryover because we don't typically get enough limitation to spend all of it. And so you have these carryover funds. With August redistribution, they give you the limitation to spend those carryover funds, I guess is the easiest way to say it. So this year, what we've been told is there an opportunity for $120 million in August redistribution. So that's what we're building our plans around for obligating funds. And, you know, that this was a thing, you know, in the past, Alaska's done fairly well. If you look across the states, last year we didn't have all the projects in the right fund types, so we didn't do as well as we hoped. I think we were shooting for 70 and we got 20 extra million. But so this next year, you know, we're putting the plan together for the full 120.
Okay. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, will using that money take a third amendment, or will the items in the baseline and Amendment 2 cover us for this year's August redistribution?
Yeah.
For the record, Catherine Keith, through the chair, Senator Keel, our current amendment number 2 allows us to meet our August redistribution goals, which would be to obligate that full 126 of extra limitation. It is programmed into amendment 2.
Thank you. Okay.
The next slide, please.
So we have several slides in the deck to talk about our current construction projects. For the public, if you want to go look at these projects yourself, you can go to the Alaska Project Exchange. It's APEX at the DOT website, and you can also download these individual PDF pages. But in Northern Region, what you'll see here are a lot of projects that are continuing on from previous years and new projects for 2025. When we're talking about work that's going on actively in this construction season, that's when we start using the metric of contractor payments. What's the money that's going out to do active work in the communities? In Northern Region as a whole, we're looking at about $300 to $330 million going out in contractor payments. And within that amount, there's $55 million going into the Fairbanks metropolitan area itself. For highways projects, we have several major corridor projects, including the Alaska Highway Milepost 1252 to 1268. We have multiple segments along the Dalton Highway, including 289 to 305. We also have the Yukon River Bridge redecking project along the Dalton Highway as well. On the Elliott, there's rehabilitation work on milepost 51 to 63. And we also have some CMGC projects that you won't see on the tentative advertising list, but that are moving forward this year. That includes the Richardson Highway milepost 346 Chena Flood Bridge project. It includes the Parks Highway milepost 319 to 322 reconstruction project. And off the in rural Alaska, we also have the Kotzebue to Cape Blossom Road project. This is the second stage of this project, and that's a CMGC project as well. There's several airport improvement projects that are underway. This includes projects that we have at Chalkeetsuk, Buckland, Dead Horse, Kotzebue, the Crosswind Runway. And then we have other community road projects that are starting this year, including in Nome, where we have the, Sepala Drive project and Stedman Street reconstruction. And we also have a project in Ruby, the Ruby Slough Road, and ongoing work in Shishmaref, helping with erosion control on the sanitation road. So a lot going on across the region in Northern. In the Fairbanks area specifically, we have several ADA, American with the Disability Act, improvement projects that are happening in the Fairbanks streets. We also have some safety improvement projects for roundabouts, Chena Small Tracks roundabouts, and some improvements at Richardson Highway, milepost 351. And then we also have resurfacing and reconstruction projects in Cowell Street, Chena Ridge, and Chena Pump Roads. So lots of activity happening, and we'll continue to address any challenges with project delivery in these areas here as we go. In Southwest Alaska, there's a lot of airport projects here that are called out and some major bridge projects. For airports, we have Kipnik, Kangiganak, Queethluk, and Nightmute. And Nightmute is a new project for 2025. The Takotna projects have been bid out as a bundle, so there's three bridge replacements that are happening. We had these out previously, but the costs came back quite high, and we needed to regroup a bit on these to find some other strategy. So we do have them. They have been the bid process is complete, but they haven't yet been awarded.
And can you highlight that a little bit more when there's a bid, but there's a delay in awarding? Mm-hmm. What's going on with that throughout the different regions?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Stedman. We'll have projects. When we looked at the table earlier, there was a currently advertising list of $15 million. There is a bucket of projects which have already gone out to bid, which are pending award. Between the time that they're advertising to when we actually award it, it's about 60-day period of time while we go through the contracting process. So right now we have over $120 million in projects that have been bid, but we're going through final contracting paperwork pending award. So we expect that $120 million to be awarded in this next month.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Next slide.
Great. So now we have interestingly formatted slide in the Anchorage area. This is the Anchorage metropolitan area. Here we have, about $32 million overall in contractor payments happening and continuing, and new work in the area. Pavement preservation projects. Some new ones that we have are the Eagle River Loop Road and VFW Road. We have 88th Avenue from Abbott to Lake Otis, and DeArmond Road from 140th to Hillside. And for work continuing on, we have Elmore Road from Abbott to Providence, and Highland Road, milepost 0 to 3.2. There's pavement preservation work on Minnesota Drive from Tudor to 15th and A Street as well. We continue to have some safety improvement projects, especially given the fatalities that occurred in this last year. So we'll see several highway safety improvement projects that are being added to the AMATS, the Anchorage MPO TIP, the Transportation Improvement Program, which we look forward to either getting to construction this year or into next year once approvals are underway.
Okay, Senator Kaufman, and then we'll go to Senator Merrick.
Thank you, through the chair. Commissioner Ryan, the projects that we see here for Anchorage, given the funding that's available, does this seem typical? Is this a normal slate of projects for the Anchorage area?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Kaufman. I think we really want to get to with Anchorage is to get back to some of the bigger on the NHS jobs. One that we've been working towards is the Glen Highway for the repave, basically between Anchorage and all the way to Palmer. So that is scheduled for 2026. There's a lot of drainage work that has to happen there, and so we're working through those final details. And along with that, we're also going to include the integrated management, traffic management features, where we're really going to make sure that there's that ability if something bad happens along that route, a big disruption, that there's ways for people to turn around, people to have alternative routes. So that will be something of a focus. I think there's a lot of projects within, when we talk about the different fund types, within that fund type sub-allocation for the population over 200,000, that's one of our big areas where we're carrying forward a lot of funds because the projects haven't been delivered yet. So that is a big focus. We would love to get those projects on the street. Some of those projects, the utilities challenges and things. I know, for example, Ingrid Gamble is one where, we have projects to really improve that corridor for pedestrians, to take care of the utilities along there, to get them underground and things like that. That one's been a challenge for us, and so we were hoping to get that this year, and we didn't. So that's still on the books for next year. So just the things like that have been kind of bungling us up. But it's a focus. We've even talked to the Muni about, the municipality of Anchorage, about how we work together to maybe help with some of these together. I know on the Kenai we had some success with the borough mayor down there in approaching the utility companies together to get past some of these obstacles. And so having some ideas like that may be helpful in the Anchorage area as well. So to answer your question, we want more projects there. They're in the works. We just haven't been able to deliver them yet.
Senator Merrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question was answered about the Glen Highway.
Okay, thank you. So we're going to pick the pace up a little bit and get through these districts because they've got broader issues. Okay. We don't need to go through every single project on this. We'll run out of time.
Thank you, Chair Stedman. So for the record, Ryan Anderson. So the next slide is Anchorage International Airport. And I think the big takeaway there is just an enormous amount of cargo growth. You know, we have a great infrastructure program, taxiways, and we're working on the cargo hard stands. We are going to keep pushing on Anchorage International Airport to expand where it needs to be expanded to accommodate the growth that's happening on the cargo side. You'll see also a lot of projects related to security and just, you know, the gates. We have a lot of old gate infrastructure, getting that replaced, and just really across the board keeping Anchorage International Airport as our jewel in Alaska. So. Kenai Peninsula is the next slide, and you can see there's a very robust program plan for the Kenai Peninsula, both out of in the Kenai-Soldotna area as well as down near Homer. And so you can see the list of projects. I guess these are some of these projects, of course, are our highway safety corridor on the Sterling, so make sure we can clean that up. And then there's some longstanding pavement issues and whatnot down by Homer. So. And then, of course, Cooper Landing is listed on here, which we'll talk about as a separate. MATSU as well has a very robust construction season coming up. I think, you know, we have established an office in the MATSU now for DOT, kind of a district office, and that's been very helpful for just keeping that pressure on and making sure those projects are getting out to deliver. Also on this slide, if you look out on the Glen Highway, we are going to get out to 66.5 to 92 mile for a pavement rehabilitation and to deal with those rock slopes out there if you've driven that stretch. And we have some more. There's also a bad stretch out in the Glen on 143 to 154 that we're going to take care of as well. So we have a good plan for the MATSU, heading the Glen, heading east. And, yeah, we're going to be pushing on those projects.
For the record, Catherine Keith. So in the South Coast area, a couple major projects that you'll see are the completion of the Haines Highway project. That's also been bid, not yet awarded. There'll be work ongoing this year. And Skagway State Street rehabilitation, which was a project that did see some delays as a result of changes to our STIP processes, which required an amendment to occur prior to that project getting awarded. In this area, you'll see a lot of projects that pertain to slope stability, rockfall mitigation, culvert replacements, as well as just general rehabilitation and improvement projects.
So the Haines delay for awarding that contract, is there a brief synopsis you can give us on that project? I think that's like a $35 million project or somewhere in there.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Stedman. Yeah, this project was bid in November, and we expect it to be awarded next week, as early as next week.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Next week that it is. We'll hope for the best.
Yes.
Senator Cronk.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm going to go back to the Glenna Highway. So I've pretty much driven every road in Alaska that I can, and for the most part, every road's been rebuilt. But there's a section on the Glen that is still the original road from, like, mile 75 to 90 along Long Lake, where it's just very – there's no guardrails. I mean, you go off the road. When – I mean, because it's not my district, but my people drive from Glen Allen to Anchorage, and they're like, when is that ever going to get put in place? I mean, we're redoing roads that we've already redone, but that one is just continually very dangerous. So the question is, when is that one going to actually be addressed?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Cronk. Yeah, it's a great question. So when we did the last STIP, STIP Amendment 1, we got the most comments about that stretch of road. Those folks were very vocal, and that was great to see. So when you look at STIP Amendment 2, what we've done is we want to reset that project. You know, it was going through Western Federal Lands for the design, and we've decided now we're going to take it back to DOT, and we're going to have it as a DOT project. What we've done in the STIP Amendment 2 is we've isolated out that realignment section so we can do all the rest of the work in the meantime, so we're not slowing anything else down. And then the 66 to 92 project will take care of the road to get us, you know, 5 to 10 years while we really start working that realignment stretch. So it's there. We're starting on it. But, yeah, there were some challenges there with Section 106, cultural resources, all those things, so we've got to get through that. Yeah.
Okay, we'll go on to slide 15.
For the record, Catherine Keith. So with Haines, Skagway, Ketchikan, and Juneau, we talked about this briefly with the projects in Haines and Skagway State Street, several safety improvement projects in the Juneau area. And in the South Coast region, regarding airports, there's several major airport improvement projects that we're excited to see move forward, including a significant number of improvements at the Kodiak Airport. We have the Sitka Airport Terminal project, airport projects in False Pass, some Haines resurfacing, and in Wrangell, we have some gate replacement security upgrades happening there.
Okay. Any other, if there are any other questions about projects, happy to take them this time.
No, we'll go on to Marine Highway.
All right.
The subject comes up every year at this table for some reason.
Thank you, Co-Chair Stedman. So this slide shows really, you know, our vessel replacement. Now, on the AMHS side, we do have our long-range plan, the AMHS long-range plan, which is scheduled to go out to public notice on Friday. And so that's just a reminder to everyone when that comes out. It's great to hear everyone's comments. So that'll be a big push for us. And that's been done in conjunction with the Alaska Marine Highway Operations Board. This is our proposed vessel replacement plan as we see it right now. You can see, we have several projects like the Aurora, the Hubbard, the Latuya, which, you know, there's those vessels continue. We haven't had any challenges there. On the Columbia, that's our one vessel that's running right now for a mainliner that's serving all of Alaskans. We did get the Wi-Fi upgrades installed this past winter, and so that is a ship now. If you go on that ship, there's Wi-Fi available going to Bellingham and then up to Haines and Skagway. So we were excited about that. We had a project for a propulsion upgrade on that for a propeller issue, but we had the engineers review it. And folks are comfortable with the Columbia right now and the shape that the Columbia is in. So we're going to keep that ship running without any big scheduled overhauls or capital projects here in the future. The Kennecott right now, of course, is down at Everett Shipyards. There's a $25 million approximately emissions and exhaust project that was required, and so we're getting that done. The LeConte right now is going through an extended overhaul. One of our strategies is when we get a chance is to do these extended overhauls on some of these older vessels because we want to make sure that as we go through the next few years, they're in the best shape as possible because we know the next few years as we're building new ships, this time when we've got to keep everything going. So we're really in that phase. On the Matanuska, we have been going through an assessment process of that's one of our ships that's tied up down in Ketchikan. It's a hotel ship right now. It doesn't meet the U.S. Coast Guard requirements to be out there serving Alaskans. And so we do have funds through the Rural Ferry Programs. It's about $37.5 million in a grant to upgrade that vessel. Our challenge right now is what's the total cost to upgrade that vessel. Some of the estimates we've seen exceed $100 million. But we don't, we're waiting for that final report. We've done a lot of audio gauging of the hull and the steel on the vessel, and so we're going through that. And our plan is to have a good the next meeting with the AMHA board to really go through that work that's been done and have that discussion. The Taslina has a crew quarters project, so we can do the same thing like we did in the Hubbard to add the crew quarters. It's about a $20 million project. And just for your awareness, we are right now, because of some of the challenges with the LeConte and the extended overhaul, it's extending into, I think we're into June now. I have asked what are the capabilities of our staff to be able to get the Taslina up and running in case we run too late with the LeConte and we can have another ship out there to help support Northland Canal and the other communities out there. So we're working through some ideas like that. And then, of course, the Testamina. We have the Testamina replacement vessel project. I think Director Tornga was up not too long ago testifying, and he provided the schedule, which was a September-October, I believe, advertisement, for the construction of that vessel. So we're getting there on that. We have secured all the funds through the discretionary grants for the construction of that vessel. Well, we have a planned future vessel there of a new mainliner. That's something we have $10 million for the design portion of. That we've been able to secure. And then, of course, we also have our no-low emissions ferry, which we have a $53 million grant, and we're proceeding with that one as well. I believe the RFP for the design of that just went out about a week ago.
Okay. So on the Matanuska, it doesn't appear that ship's going to ever sail again? in the fleet, and I would encourage DOT to cut its losses. If they're not going to sail it, we need to fess up to the public and just deal with it and move on. Some of us would like to see that ship refurbished so we'd have a ship on the line while we replace or we wait for the new vessels to be built. But from what I understand, it's never leaving the dock except for the scrapyard. So yeah. I think the quicker we just be right up front with the public, the better off we are and move on. And if there's some economic reason why we hold it for a hotel at the Alaska Ship and Dry Dock, you know, we understand that, to, you know, control our costs and stuff. But from what I understand, that ship's never going to sail again in the fleet.
Yeah, Co-Chair Stedman, if I could. Yeah, there's definitely some challenges with that vessel. You know, when we went through this with the Malaspina, definitely we want a public process to go through, as so everyone's on board with the decision that's made. The hotel challenges are real. Ketchikan's a tough place for housing, and so we will definitely need to factor that in if we did decide to dispose of the Matanuska. We need a place to house folks when ships are in the yard. We have a lot of people that work out there that are housed right now in the Matanuska, so that's something we're looking at.
Okay. And then on the Tuscumina and the new mainliner coming, it would be nice if there's some synergy between the construction of the ship so we don't have different engines and gearboxes and anchor winches, and if we can't just replicate a design over and over for two or three times, it would be helpful. And then if you could, Mr. Commissioner, there's a document that came out last night. I want to touch on that because it's significant to the impacts of the Marine Highway, and the committee members will find that on their packet. It's dealing with the grant funds that are coming out of Washington from the great help of Senator Murkowski with the Marine Highway. There is some concern with what's going on in Washington about potential delivery of some of these funds, of course, along with Medicaid, school funding, and other areas that we could be significantly impacted financially. And I was wondering, Mr. Commissioner, if you could highlight and let the committee know what this document is and when these funds are expected to come into the Treasury, because my understanding, a lot of these funds have not arrived in the Treasury as yet. And you can bring up a lifeline.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Sedman. Yeah, I will call up the author of this document, right. Director Domfino.
And, Mr., go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and who you represent.
For the record, Dom Pannone, Director of Program Management and Administration for DOT.
So, Mr. Pannone, I know you. I appreciate you responding to us and putting this document together, and we notified you, I think, last night after we got it, that after I saw it, I thought we should put it in front of the committee to just highlight that. It'll be a document probably with more, I wouldn't want to say pertinence, but probably more time spent on it at the subcommittee level as we work through the Marine Highway. But I just want all the committee members to be kind of up to speed with what we're working on and hoping for, because this hopefully is the first of many five-year increments on this program if it gets refunded. But we are concerned with the changes in Washington that we get the cash in our hot hand.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. So, the purpose of this document was to show how successful we've been in receiving the awards from this program, and showing that in the authorized amount of this program, there's $410 million remaining to be awarded in future years.
Could you stop there? Just for those watching at home, let's tell them what the program is, because I did a pretty poor job, very high level. Tell them what the program is and then walk through it. It'll make more sense.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This program is the Rural Ferry Service Program that was authorized in Section 71103 of the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. It was a five-year program that authorized $200 million annually to be awarded through a discretionary grant program for ferry services that provided service between rural communities separated by 50 sailing miles, and the Alaska Marine Highway is a prime candidate to receive those funds. So over the past couple of years, we've submitted grant applications for both capital projects and for operating funds under this program, and we've been awarded $569 million. Well, sorry, it's a little less than that. One year, we American Samoa received $21 million. So we've received approximately $540 million through this program.
So it's a successful program, correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. And some of these awards require the STIP amendment for us to establish a grant, and so we're working through that in this amendment that's outlined here. And until we establish a grant, we don't have a contract in place to deliver the grant. And as our commissioner said, we haven't yet experienced delays from the Federal Highway Administration, but we certainly have been experiencing delays from the Federal Transit Administration with some of these applications, which are pending and have been pending since for a few months now. They've had a significant loss in staff as well. So the document goes over that. And as you said, we're hopeful this program does get reauthorized in the next transportation bill and continues into the future.
Okay. And some of these funds have not been received yet, and I think, so I understand that we're cash flowing some of these issues through the Treasury. Is that correct?
Correct, Mr. Chairman. The way the grants work is once we've established a grant, it's a reimbursement program. And for the grants that are pending, for example, we are waiting on the operating grant for calendar year 25 to be established. We have pre-grant authority, pre-award authority. Mm-hmm. So we incur the expenses, and then once the grant becomes established, the contract, we get reimbursement for any expenses.
And the reason I mentioned that, Mr. Bernone, is we're having discussions here at the table dealing with our budget over the next 3 years and the need for cash availability to cash flow the state. And this is a primary example where there's a delay in receiving funds, but we expense funds. So that is why we can't take the CBR to zero. We've got a cash flow of the state, and this is just an example of that. So the other concern we have is if they don't extend the program, we could be put in a position where we have to backfill about 70, 71, 72 million. And Marine Highway budget is what we're concerned about when we look forward. And we'll have the subcommittee look at some of those numbers and give it some thought as to, you know, in the event that the federal government decides not to fund this for another 5 years, we're going to have to fix the hole, and it'll be significant. So it's a issue that is coming attractions over the next couple of years, but it's something that I think the committee needs to be aware of, and we need to have some discussion on how we're going to deal with it in the event that something does happen. And have you heard anything from the administration on the electric ferry portion grant? Are they going to shut that down? Or because I know some of the energy issues are being squeezed, the low-emission ferry, as I guess is what how you have it worded here, which we think of as the electrical ferry from Metlakatla to Ketchikan.
So Mr. Chairman, the electric or low-no-emission ferry was a separate program under the same law, and we have an established grant for the design of that ferry. So under normal circumstances, we continue on with a grant agreement and deliver and get refunded for our expenses when we have an established grant in place.
Okay, well, I just encourage you to let us know immediately in the event that some of these funds end up in the icebox. frozen for whatever reason, or stopped or delayed, or because we're concerned, like I mentioned, with Medicaid and potentially education funding, depending on what they do over the next couple of months. So anyway, I thought this document would be of importance to the committee. And what we want to do is track the construction and the cash flow of the replacement ships and the Marine Highway as we, you know, work forward to try to keep the system running. The if we just have a brief at ease. Come back on the record. It's always helpful to have staff, Mr. Commissioner. You got a lifeline once in a while. I have to ask one, you know. I forgot the term letters of agreement. They're used quite a bit the last few years to increase some salaries and fill holes along the way so we can have adequate staff in state agencies. And does the Marine Highway use letters of agreement to help bring in their licensed mariners that we need to staff the ship so we can run them? And if so, good. And if not, why not?
Chair Stedman, for the record, Ryan Anderson. Yes, we do use letters of agreement, depending on the situations. You know, that's pretty much the one way that you can modify, a collective bargaining unit agreement after it's been negotiated. We are, we recognize with some of our challenges we've had with payroll and whatnot, that those complicate things. And so really we're going through negotiations right now with the three maritime unions. And one of our objectives is, hey, let's do as much as we can here to eliminate as many of those LOAs that we can as we go forward. So our goal is to not have those out there just because they complicate a lot of things when you're downstream trying to calculate pay and all of those kind of things.
I recognize the complexities and the challenges that we have them here at the table with even tracking them through all the departments. I think OMB has trouble with that and Ledge Finance, and let alone us. So, but I would just encourage the Marine Highway to do what they can to fill the positions. We should go on to page 17, touch on that briefly. We kind of covered it a little bit, and then we'll go into other attractions that we're working with at DOT.
Okay. Chair Stedman, for the record, Ryan Anderson. This is just a quick slide on, not only vessels, but we're also focused on the terminals and the shore side. And like I think, Chair, that you had mentioned, making sure all of these things are compatible is so important. And so our goal is that, every ship, every dock that you can take an Alaska-class ferry and move it to Prince William Sound when you need to, so we can have that flexibility in the system. So this is our plan. We're funded about $170 million right now for all of these facilities, 12 communities, and it's going to make a big difference in how flexible and the service that we're able to provide when the unexpected things happen. So we're excited about this. I know this has been a long time coming. In the next 2 to 3 years, you're going to see a lot of major construction on the maritime side on these terminal facilities. So we're excited about that for sure.
Okay. We'll go on to number 18. We're doing good on time, so I'll watch the clock.
For the record, Catherine Keith. We want to focus on key actions. What are we doing, dealing with any external situations, and what do we want to do to accelerate projects? One of the challenges we have been talking about is the impact of inflation, what that's doing for material and labor costs across our projects. While many of our projects aren't seeing such significant inflation, our rural airport projects are having impact from inflation, where we're seeing big increases over our original estimate, which what that ends up doing for our airport improvement program is having projects that can't be funded in the intended year, they get pushed out to following years. We speak to the National Highway Construction Cost Index. This pulls together cost inflation on several components that comprise our highway and our construction projects. What we're seeing is that's been 67% up from quarter four in 2020. So what we're doing to help mitigate that, we've standardized some aspects of our cost estimating process across the department. We're applying some standard low-level inflation to help forecast our cost estimate based on the year of expenditure in which that's occurring. We'd like to do that more at a granular level, looking at specific materials within a project cost so that we can apply the correct inflation rate to different portions of that project, and that perhaps that can help us be a bit more dynamic with our cost estimating processes. Other things that we're looking at are with the federal fund distribution timing. Commissioner Anderson mentioned that on our FAA projects last year they were awarded, or we went to grant late in the year so that construction on those projects couldn't occur until the following construction season. And we are looking at strategies for what we can do to pull those earlier into the year so we can get out to advertisement closer to April instead of August or September. Another strategy with accelerating the project is advanced construction, as Commissioner mentioned. You'll see in our statewide transportation improvement program, there is a lot of use for advanced construction in every year throughout the STIP. And our goal with that is to increase flexibility so that if there are changes to projects that occur, we have alternatives that can either move forward into this year or that the timing of when that moves forward is not just tied to the available revenue types, the available fund sources for those projects, that we can get projects out on the street and to the public sooner. With both Buy America compliance and right-of-way acquisition, a lot of this is ongoing conversation about how we can be proactive when we're seeing acquisition delays, where we're having utility relocation challenges so that we can get on top of it earlier on in the process.
And with these escalating cost inflation, are we having problems with issued contracts, with the contractors having inflation run away from their bid price?
Yeah, Chair Stedman, yes, that is the case. On our highways side, for example, last year, Skagway State Street, when that came back more than 20% higher than our engineer's estimate, that required a significant delay, resulted in delay because of need to go out for amendment. So part of that is procedural, but also on our airport side, when we have projects that are coming back, we have a couple instances over 200-300% our original cost. We can't move forward with those projects until we re-budget out the remaining projects program for that year. Last year in 2024, we had 14 projects that did not get awarded. A majority of those came back too high for us to move forward with that program, so we had to readjust our strategy and scope for those projects. And then now they're moving out in 2025.
I just thought this information would be applicable to some of the decision-making here at the table as we go forward looking at other projects, in particular when we start looking at large multi-billion-dollar projects that don't seem to be represented to have any real inflation impact on them. When we look around DOT or in Alaska or we look around the country, we see escalations like this here in this chart. And I'd be shocked if our gas line is inversely related to this chart. It's kind of a side note of other things we're working on at the table that gets intertwined with impacts that DOT faces. We'll go on to 19.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Other strategies that we're looking at have to do with making on the pre-construction side, looking at innovative strategies to have consultants at the table to provide additional support for our construction projects. One of the alternative procurement methods is general engineering consultants, and this is a tool that's used in other states. Washington State DOT, for example, uses these, and it allows the consultants to work with our staff, you know, either at our facility or co-located, but they're working in close proximity so that we can move an area of projects forward. It's similar to a term agreement if you're familiar with our procurement methodologies. With this, if we had a general engineering consultant on board, then we could more quickly issue specific projects as task orders and potentially have a shortened period of time to get from our approved project to environmental document. Our department is still averaging 6 years from the time we start a project to when we get our environmental document approved, and that's a metric that we'd like to see shortened, and general engineering consultants is one tool that could help us get there.
Okay. I think the subcommittee would be interested in working with DOT to facilitate some of this process, including how you manage this, the STIP, if you need to restructure that or what have you to make things run smoother. We're interested in working with you to whatever it takes to make that work.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. That does tie into the bottom two items on this slide where we're looking at our agile project management strategies and our modernization of project delivery and forecasting tools. So a lot of this does play into Senator Kaufman's strengths with his change management background, and we've had several great conversations over the past couple of years in Senate Transportation Committee on these topics. But we do have a project management office. It has three positions, and the sole focus of this is to support our project managers, find ways to give them tools or support that they need or provide some directive support where it's helpful. But primarily, in order to have data-driven decisions on our projects, we do need that data available in a digital platform, which is what we do have now as a result of the modernization of our statewide transportation improvement program, which gives us our project delivery plan, which is a digital format of every project that the state is running. So this allows us to be very much in the weeds on where we're at a project level, but then it rolls up to a portfolio level so we can get a glance of where our program is at and gives us transparency into when we're having delays. So as these tools continue to develop in the upcoming years, especially this year, we're going to see a lot of development, and it should save our staff and consultants a significant time.
And our staff time with inquiries also.
Yes. Thank you.
So go on to 20. Mm-hmm.
Chair Sedman, for the record, Ryan Anderson. So the committee had asked for an update on the Sterling Highway, we call it the Milepost 45 to 60 reconstruction project, also known as Cooper Lanny Bypass. This slide is basically the overview of the project. It's about a 15-mile realignment of the highway to make sure that we can avoid the community of Cooper Landing. This, of course, has a lot of history to it, longest EIS in the nation, but we're getting there. The important thing on this slide is it really shows the sequencing, because there's been a lot of discussion about the cost increases. I think we kind of get back to some of these inflationary discussions. One thing I will say on the inflationary discussions, you know, with the DOT and the federal requirements, they absolutely, you know, drive up the costs with the administrative requirements. The Build America, Buy America right now, you know, there's a high demand for those items. So prices are going up for us in particular because of that. But this slide shows how, we're funded through stage 1A, 2, 3, and 4. So as you go through there, and of course, stage 2 is the very active one that you will see this summer, which is building that Juneau Creek Bridge, which is about, I think we AC'd about $140 million last year, I want to say, on that one in approximate numbers to make sure that this project continues forward, because that bridge is a critical path. There's a discussion right now about stage 1B, which would be the next logical sequence of work to be done. The project is about, it's pretty much shovel ready. This is a CMGC alternative contracting method, so we have a contractor that's on board. The discussion right now is, you know, can Stage 1B fit into our program this year? And so we're going through that. You know, you'll see it. I believe we added it in the STIP as an AC again. So we're back to talking about, you know, AC in the program. But that's one that's in discussion right now with the current discussion with the Association of General Contractors and this discussion about, you know, work needs and whatnot. So we're keeping that one in the mix. And then you'll see there's Stage 5 and Stage 6. There's about $40 million worth of archaeology that has to happen on that Stage 5 segment. So some of these things, when, you know, I know folks, man, we want this thing done. There are still some work that has to be done in advance of construction that isn't done yet. So we are just trying to communicate that, hey, you know, we're trying to think these things through logically, not only from the perspective of managing our budget and our STIP, but also what that work that needs to be done and how long that takes as well.
Okay. Next slide.
And then this is just a slide, a real quick one on the inflation on the project cost history of this project. The IFP was our initial finance plan. When you look up at the 2023 AFPU, that's the annual financial plan update. So we're required to do these financial plans for large projects with the Federal Highway Administration. So there's a document that could be provided to the committee if they request, if you all requested, that really lays out, you know, how this project, what the initial costs were, how the costs have grown, and then of course, you know, by different disciplines, pre-construction, right-of-way, utilities, and construction. And so you can see right now the total project cost estimated is $893 million approximately for getting this thing over the finish line in the end.
Right. For the record, Catherine Keith, this slide in its small detail shows the committee what we have planned on the National Highway System over the next 4 years and what's programmed in our statewide transportation improvement program. It does give an interesting view of the corridors and the distribution of work that's currently planned and ready for construction within the next 4 years. So a couple highlights that I can point out. Sterling Highway overall has the particular project, milepost 45 to 60, it has $210 million programmed in the STIP, with $130 that, as Commissioner mentioned, currently planned for Stage 1B. The Seward Highway, along that corridor, we have milepost 98.5 to milepost 112, and that is a changed termini from what we have previously had planned for this project. The current project is intended to go Bird Flats to McHugh Creek. That's programmed for $182 million, with $150 million of that in construction. Along the Dalton Highway, several of those major segments total up to $137 million, with $96 million of that in construction. So as we go through this, you can just see how, you know, we try to have a distribution of work among the corridors so that any one corridor in particular doesn't get bogged down with construction in 1 year. Our National Highway System project is programmed out right now for easily 10 years, the amount of work that we have planned and programmed at one point as needed projects. And so we're working towards a 10-year plan, not just us on the National Highway System, but statewide, and it's pretty easy to furnish that on our National Highway System for its outstanding needs.
Okay, let's go to the next slide. We're looking out over the next year or maybe out 3 years. We got to survive that before we get to year 9 or 10.
Thank you.
Interesting. And if I could, I'll have Mr. Hodgins up here for deferred maintenance. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you very much for having us. For the record, my name is Christopher Hodgin. I'm a project delivery lead with our Division of Facilities Services, and so it's my privilege to serve our Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. So this is specific on facilities, deferred maintenance and facilities. So a brief overview of the facilities in the division. The division owns 706 facilities across the state. 668 of these facilities are DOT-specific, mission-specific facilities, such as our highways and aviation maintenance stations, equipment storage buildings and our campuses on Fairbanks, Anchorage, and Juneau. So then we've got some other categories of multi-tenant, multi-agency facilities represented under a DFS category and public building fund facilities category. These are distinct in that we house multiple departments like in those facilities, and on the center like table we've got the other departments that you can see that reside in those facilities. So advancing to the next slide, just showing what our present backlog is. So our current division backlog in deferred maintenance is $373 million. So what this represents is $163 million in deferred maintenance backlog in the DOT and DFS DOT specific usage facilities and the DFS multi-agency facilities. The public building fund category of facilities has an estimated backlog of $210 million. So this distinction in the public building facilities, these are 12 major office buildings, is that these facilities are able to gain funding for deferred maintenance through capturing leases through their tenant agreements. So the bottom left graph, so it illustrates for our DOT and PF and DFS specific facilities, the prior allocations over the prior fiscal year. So on average, that comes out to about $3.5 million. And on the bottom right graph, this is the allocations in prior fiscal years for our PBF facilities, and on average, that is about $4.8 million per year.
And can you remind the committee how much is in the governor's proposed budget for FY26 for these categories?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. For clarification on the category of deferred maintenance, sir. Yes. So my understanding is that it will be rough order of magnitude in the $20 million range.
So he has $20 million in this year's budget?
Yes, across all of the executive branch departments.
Okay.
Thank you.
And why on the left, the bottom right chart, did it stop in 21? Been no expenditures since then?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, we actually, that chart, we have a corrected chart that has all of those fiscal years that can show all of those prior years from the PBF. So we'll be happy to provide that.
I didn't quite follow you. So you have a chart that goes beyond 15 or forward to 21?
We have through 15 through 24.
Okay. Was that just a typo on
yes,
the chart?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, if you make a mistake, just let us know.
Thank you. It was.
We try to be a little more current than 4 or 5 years behind us.
Thank you. And this is just an example slide. So from those previous appropriations for our DOT facilities, some of the example projects that we have done on the bottom left is our Fairbanks Pegger Road campus roofing upgrades, and on the right, some heating and boiler replacements at our Yakutat maintenance station, and then anticipated for 2025 delivery. We've got some generator replacements that we anticipate, some asbestos abatements, as well as some other projects following as well.
And who's responsible for Mount Edgecombe High School?
Thank you. So we serve the Department of Education through the, Mr. Chairman. Our section helps provide the design and construction through Department of Education for Mount Edgecombe High School. So they provide us a reimbursable service agreement. So we're able to help do the design and construction of those projects.
Does that include demolition of old World War II structures and the mess, or how is that handled?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Over the last year, this is specific to your question. Over the last year, we conducted a master plan. We had a consultant assist the school with a master plan. As part of that master plan, it included potential teacher housing, which would be in the same place as demolished old structures on the campus. So that was included in the master plan. So as should it be ever funded in the future, that's a prospective potential path to do.
Okay, well, it'll be a subject for another meeting, but we'll take a look at that. There is a concern that we have old World War II garages that are, frankly, a plight that need to be addressed. Kids and homeless people are hanging out in them. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. maybe just going back a slide or two, did I understand right at the 4.3, almost 4.4 million square feet in the between DOT and facility services outside the public building fund, and your whole maintenance backlog is $163 million?
Through the chair, thank you, Senator Keel, for the question. That is the $163 million, yes, it is for the 668 facilities as of current information that we have from our maintenance and operations teams.
And if I might, Mr. Chairman, how recently have those been surveyed and updated?
Thank you, and I can address that through a couple of slides coming forward.
Okay, we can wait for the slide.
Yeah.
Could have anticipation here.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, and that'll, right. Thank you. Through the chair, that will help address the question.
So we'll go on to 26. Any other questions before we jump to 26? Okay, we'll go to 26.
Thank you. So through our approach for deferred maintenance, so it is three tiers of approach. First is doing facility condition assessments. So over the last year, we had facility condition assessments done through 28 of our facilities. These were high occupancy, high square footage facilities to help inform the deferred maintenance needs and to help with the priorities on deferred maintenance. We are going to do additional facility condition assessments on our other specific DOT usage buildings to help build out more of the deferred maintenance backlog and to help our maintenance and operations teams understand more of the specific needs and priority needs at those facilities. So we chose these the high square footage facilities first so we could see what the data looked like from our consultants doing the condition assessments, and we could get a higher proportion of the facilities. Then the other facilities after that, they require, in many cases, they require a lot of travel and they're remote. So looking at these facility assessments, they were beneficial, so we want to continue doing those for our other DOT-specific facilities.
Okay, next slide.
And then our next steps for deferred maintenance. So within the department will prioritize its deferred maintenance projects and then present that to the state's facilities council for the prioritization and then recommendation to the Office of Management and Budget for funding. So that is those projects that will be funded by the state capital GF. And then for the public building fund facilities, so the division has prioritized those and we've submitted them for approval. Once those projects are funded and confirmed, whether they are through state general fund, capital general fund, or through the public building fund, they'll be completed either through our maintenance and operations teams or through the design and construction process.
Okay.
Thinking in our final slide regarding deferred maintenance, these are just some other considerations that come up as we consider deferred maintenance on our facilities. Some as facilities change, as they age, as technologies change, sometimes deferred maintenance needs are not sufficient to accomplish all of the needs of the facilities. So when this happens, we do designs for replacement of our facilities. So for example, we have some maintenance station designs that are underway now, nearing completion for some of our maintenance stations. So Haynes and Northway and some others, as we complete those designs, we'll be sharing them within the department for further detail.
Senator Kroc.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I have a question. I think it refers back to Senator Stedman. So as we move forward, whether I don't care what building it is, can we actually have the same systems built in every building, you know, whether it's heating, because we look at our schools and they're all different, right? There's got to be some consistency for efficiencies for as we build new buildings across the state, because it's real frustrating that, well, if we engineer somewhere else, it's all the different systems, right? And that doesn't help us save costs in any aspect. Just the question.
Yeah. Thank you. Through the chair, thank you, Senator Kronk. That is a wonderful question. Through the designs, we love to have as much as possible throughout our different facilities around the state, consistent designs, similar designs. What is interesting about in the design process is that when you look at the different climates in Alaska, the different geotechnical conditions you have to deal with in Alaska, the different availabilities of of heating fuel, whether it be natural gas or oil or renewables. All of those considerations have to be put in the aspects of the design. So as much as possible, you try and take consistent designs and apply them into the certain circumstance. But depending on the geographic location, you must have specific, unique characteristics of the design that is important for the design team to take into consideration. So it's a balance of each, of taking those similar characteristics that you can include in the design, and then the specific characteristics of the site. So wonderful question. Thank you.
So we understand all that. I think the issue is we want to see the schools to be very similar. We want to see maintenance shops to be very similar. We want to see the same engines in all our ferry boats, if at all possible, because we just get inundated with different systems, and it gets expensive.
Yeah.
So, but we understand the geographical schematic of the state. So on your deferred maintenance list, how do you go about prioritizing, and how do you bring that forward for consideration by OMB or by the commissioner and OMB for inclusion in the budget?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Stedman. There is a prioritization methodology. So it creates, the prioritization methodology uses a project index value. So that value is comprised of the importance that facility has to a specific agency, plus what we call a system factor. The system factor is the impact that particular system in the facility has to its operation, and then plus the need. So those are mathematically done into a product to kind of prioritize and rank and stack the project index value. Then that is brought to the facilities council. And the facilities council, the statewide facilities council, uses the same prioritization methodology for those.
Okay, and if you could maybe get that list to the committee and we can all take a look at it. We have harbor lists and school lists and other lists of maintenance areas that need to be done. So it would be nice to see the entirety of that list.
Thank you, Chair. Yes.
I think we also have your equipment list to work on. Spreadsheet's about as big as this table almost. So let's go on to page 29. We got about 20 minutes. I think we're okay on time, but I'll just watch the clock. We should make it fine.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Stedman. For the record, Ryan Anderson. So the next slide is just an overview of our FY 2026 federal capital program. On the left, you can see the breakout of the capital program at about $1.8 billion to our operating program at about $800 million. On the right is the breakout of our capital program, and this is all fund sources. And so you can see the comparison between our surface transportation program, also on the airport improvement program, which is a very strong program for us. You can see the rural ferry grants, which is another, that wedge has been increasing for us. And then you just kind of go through and see the different categories we have there. When you look at the other projects that are in the capital program, things like Alaska West Coast Resiliency projects, those are some of the projects that have been spun off of some of these big storms on the West Coast. We have a Ted Stevens Anchorage International 10-megawatt solar array, and that's authority to be able to construct a solar array and start really trying to diversify our energy needs at Ted Stevens Anchorage International. Of course, we have the Public Building Fund Deferred Maintenance, Renovation, Repair, and Equipment item. Wood River Canyon Bridges and Trails, this is a trail that accesses, it's actually the old Copper River Highway, the old railroad route that used to go to Cordova to McCarthy. And there's an area there that accesses the Copper River fishery, and so this is to upgrade that and to make sure that a lot of the cultural resources and there's some grave sites there can be avoided. Also, Williamsport Intermodal Connector, this is that connector that connects Cook Inlet to Lake Iliamna. It's a critical connector for the fishing industry, for Bristol Bay, as well as all the communities on Lake Iliamna and how they get their fuel and supplies there. And that's a project to upgrade that road. Dalton Highway, of course, we're focused on. And then, of course, you can see the state-managed seaplane base and harbor facility funding, as well as the rest of them. I guess I'll highlight the Silver Tip Camp Bunkhouse. We're looking on the Sterling right now. The Silver Tip is as you go through the pass there, as you're headed you know, past Girdwood and up into the mountains there. And that's one where, you know, we don't have staff that can stay there 24 hours a day. So when the storm hits, they've got to get there before they can get in the plow. And so this is to make sure we can have people there so when the storm hits, they're there and they can, and we can have a lot better response times on our highways. So really trying to work through those types of things with our thoughts.
So if you could help us with prioritized ranking of the capital request in the budget would be beneficial. We have pushing $600 million in the hole, maybe $560, $570, who knows, some number, significant number, and something's got to give. So we're asking for prioritization not only from our communities and our schools, but we should have a prioritized list from DOT also. Senator Keel.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. And then on these, I know a couple of them highlight federal or DGF. Could you help us with which ones are matching funds or leveraged funds? Does the Trail to the Fishing Hole have Dingell Johnson money in it, that kind of thing?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Keel. Yeah, great question. So, for example, the Alaska West Coast Resiliency Projects, that is match for a larger federal grant that we received. Some of these, like the Wood River Canyon Bridges, Williamsport, those are just straight state-funded projects, although we're always looking for opportunities. Like for Williamsport, for example, there's the MARAD project, Port Infrastructure Development Program.
So I think, I think what we'll do, Mr. Commissioner, rather than have you go through the litany, we'll save that for the subcommittee process. But if you could prioritize it, and we can get the list to the members, and we'll work through the budget process.
Yep, fair enough, Chair. Thank you.
And as Senator Keel referenced, obviously that includes the funding sources, right? We don't want to miss federal money because of lack of a match, stuff like that. We'll be prioritizing your prioritized list.
Fair enough. Thank you.
For the record, Catherine Keith, this slide summarizes the DOT Gov proposed 2026 operating budget. Right now you can see personnel services continues to comprise a majority of our overall operating budget at about 61%. What we're looking at is about $808.6 million for all of these components rolled up. Contractual services where we have support coming in to the department outside of personnel services, 26%, with commodities, travel, and other capital outlays the rest of the 15%. On the right-hand side, you can see the types of jobs that the department has by job classes, but it is interesting what you may have as a transportation planner position, as a drone pilot, what you might have as an operator, as an avalanche mitigation technician. So the job classes can be deceiving to, you know, really capture the width and breadth of what the department is, our staff are working on, and happy to answer any questions on this.
The operating budget chairman's not here, so we can grant you anything you want, any of your wishes.
Great.
Okay. For the record, Ryan Anderson. So this slide is just the summary of our FY 2026 operating budget and the fund sources. You can see we have about $184 million in UGF, $72 million in DGF, which consists of general fund program receipts, Alaska Marine Highway System Fund, vehicle rental receipts, and about $37 million in motor fuel tax receipts. On the federal side, we have about $81 million now in federal receipts for the operating side. And then we have various others that you can see through the selections there. I'll highlight the International Airports Revenue Fund at $127 million, and then our capital improvement project receipts at $207 million as well.
Just on, if we can just regress for a minute on the deferred maintenance, we asked you to prioritize the submitted list, but it'd be nice if it continued beyond that, what was included with through OMB. And because it's nice to look forward like we do on schools. Schools have about $250, $260 million on the list. They're not in the budget at all. We may or may not fund deferred maintenance, but we know or we have a good idea what the schools are facing around the state. It would be nice to get a feel, something similar to that to DOT. I'm not expecting the entire list, but it could be several years' worth of appropriations so the committee members could have a feel for what's going on around the state with the state deferred maintenance.
Okay, yeah, thank you, Chair. And then the next slide is really just another breakout of our operating budget. The top chart is all funds, and then the below chart is unrestricted general funds and designated general funds. And you can see, you know, when we look at all funds, of course, highways, aviation, and facilities at $180 million is our primary expenditure. International airports, of course, self-funded, $127 million. Marine highway system at about $160 million from that perspective. And just to highlight, you know, with all the discussion about project delivery, design, engineering, and construction, we're around $132 million for that one as well. In terms of the unrestricted general funds, of course, marine highway system at $82 million. International airports doesn't have anything, just to point that out. But highways, aviation, and facilities, we're at $136 million. So you can see where DOT's at in terms of operating budgets. And you know, we really have done a lot of work to try to leverage the federal funds. And I think that's something to you know, be aware of as we move forward.
So on the marine highway, the last few years, we've got the largesse from the government, federal government, coming in to help us run and rebuild the system, we've tried to bank some of the revenue generated, the cash box is what we normally call it on the marine highway, to carry forward to facilitate the system in the event that there's unplanned for disruptions. As an example, we don't get reauthorization or what have you. So can you help us with that issue? It seems to be not happening as much as we'd like.
Yeah, Chair Sedman, in terms of the banking of funds, is that the question?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, we can certainly provide the committee with the current value of that fund. I think some of our challenges are just, you know, with, you know, we go back to things like inflation. Mm-hmm. We're dealing with those things in the marine highway system as well. And mm-hmm. so, you know, folks are doing the most with their funds. I think some of the other things that we're seeing that have had an impact on our budgets, for example, there's been a lot of talk about the staff and, you know, staff shortages and these things. We have an incredible amount of workers. I mean, these folks are working what we call holdover overtime. So, you know, someone may be on for 2 weeks, but really they end up being on for six because there was nobody to cover for those extra two. Well, that's an additional expense for us. And so we can also provide those types of numbers right. for the committee. But I think that's what you'll see is there's been these incurred costs that haven't helped in terms of us, you know, achieving that strategy of banking the funds.
Okay, and if we'll work with your department on that. We do every year mm-hmm. sit down and work on the cash flow issue. I think we have similar challenges with the Department of Corrections with massive overtime and having an inability to accurately forecast and control the budget of the Department of Corrections. It's been an ongoing challenge with OMB and the legislature to jointly work on trying to rein that in. Senator Kaufman.
Thank you, through the chair. Snow removal was a huge issue last year, and I'm just wondering how we're doing on spend for snow removal. There's an easy joke there about what a much better job has been done this year. I won't play that one. But,
through the chair, Senator Kaufman. Yeah, this is an example of, I think, the challenge at, you know, for a northern latitude state and the year-to-year budgeting where you have an extreme year like last year, which was absolutely a record year, and then this year in the Anchorage area anyways, I mean, it's been really light. And so you won't see the expenditures. So we do quarterly projections with all of our regions. We go through the numbers, and yeah, everyone's this year the budgets are okay. I mean, we're not coming to the legislature from that region asking for more. Now up north, we did have a big ice storm, and they had a fairly decent event, and they actually have quite a bit of snow up north. If you haven't been up there, like in the Fairbanks area, I think that's why the Iditarod's going there. But there is some stresses there on the budgets. But again, so the strategy we've had with the being able to scale up with contractors. So we did that at the beginning of the year. You know, we got these contractors on term agreements, and so they're available for when the storms hit. We haven't had to use them in the Anchorage area much this year. Yeah, so So I think that strategy, from my perspective, still is a good one, considering how you just have these years of, extreme events or nothing, basically. Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other questions, Senator Cronk?
Thank you, Senator or Mr. Chair. I have a couple questions, but I didn't see these two things. We have two bridges in Alaska Highway, Johnson River, Gersel. And I just want to highlight the fact that lots of rumors out there have we've pushed them through the STIP to speed them up for a specific project, when in reality these were both World War II era bridges that should have been replaced 20 years ago. So when can we expect to see any progress on those two bridges?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Cronk. Yeah, great questions. You know, when we were in the Yukon and talking to our counterparts in Whitehorse, they have the same thing. They're going through and replacing their World War II bridges as well. They're coming due. I believe in the STIP, I'll defer to Deputy Commissioner Keith because she has the STIP numbers down. But those are definitely on the track. You know, the designs are ongoing, and we're getting those projects to the point where they can be delivered. But, yeah, Deputy Commissioner Keith.
Yeah, for the record, Catherine Keith, through the chair, Senator Cronk. Yeah, both of those projects are in the STIP within the next 2 years that they'll have contracts underway. We can give you the specific project schedule from the project manager when where they're at.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Another follow-up?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the other one is I really have to highlight this, the fact that whether it's Minto, Manly, Central, Circle, what are we doing to make sure that we have staff there? Like the road to Minto was literally closed for like, I mean, we're talking about roads are closed, we can't access town. And also, I can look at Northway DOT. You have two people working at Northway DOT right now. One, they're both local. One can retire any second, and the other one probably is going to jump over to Kayak this summer, so we'll have a DOT station with zero employees at it. So, and I know it's no fault of your own, but what are we doing to address these situations of making sure we have these camps manned?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Cronk, thank you. Yeah, that was a tough situation on the Elliott Highway between the intersection of the Dalton Highway and then going to Minto. That road was closed, I believe, for five-plus days. I mean, we just didn't have the staff up there. The Live and Good Camp has been a tough one for us to fill. I mean, we are actively recruiting, and those are two-week-off type jobs that in the past, people wanted those jobs. So we're going through that right now. You do see in our budget a line item for Dalton Highway contracting, because that gives us that ability that when we can't find people, okay, we've got options. Now, on the Dalton, that's tricky because you have to almost look at contracting out a camp or some scenario like that because there's no place for someone to live, you know. So we're running through those ideas right now, and so we absolutely want to make sure that's good. The other part is just good recruitment. You know, we've been through the mill on some of these incentive ideas where you do a letter of agreement to a collective bargaining unit and you do an incentive payment, varying degrees of success with that. Our challenge there is, you know, it's only good for a year, and so then every year you got to go through that again. Trying to find the solutions there. I think where we see it, though, I think places, and I don't know if it's, you know, because of the industry activity out there and we can't compete. I know we steam up the, you know, we heat up the construction year, and then we don't do ourselves any favors, you know, with the state folks. So a lot of balancing going on there, but ultimately I think we got to stay focused. There are areas where we stay filled up, you know, and Matt Sue is an example where we're fully staffed. Acreage has been doing well, so it's definitely a challenge. We don't have an answer yet.
One more question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you hit it on the spot. It's like we could fill those places, but as soon as there's a project, then those guys flip over. So we're literally not paying our guys enough to stay there. So I guess that's my point is, and I know that maybe it's not all across and everywhere, but we have certain places where they're very remote. People, if you don't live there, you're not going to want to stay there, right? Yep. So how are we doing recruiting out somewhere like Manly? Because I believe most of them used to man that camp that actually lived in Manly, yep. And they retired. But we're going to have to pay people more in order to fill these stations. That's the bottom line. So it's something that we have to look at. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Commissioner, you have any final comments on your presentation today or anything for the good of the order?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. No, we would definitely appreciate getting this information out there. We appreciate hard questions. I mean, I think that's where we want to be. We like the offer of, hey, we need to work together to help solve the problems. I think, you know, when we were meeting with the Association of General Contractors yesterday, it's, hey, you know, what are those things that, you know, we all can work together on that are productive to get us through this challenge, you know, of project delivery right now? And I think what you're going to see from us is transparent communications. I think we're, you know, we put everything on a website. If we're going through, like, the rendition with the FHWA on the Statewide Transportation Improvement Program, everyone can go on there and read the back and forth and where the state's coming from. Just those, we appreciate that from this committee. And, you know, as we go forward, yeah, please feel free to reach out. We'll always provide information. And then I would also just ask, there's two big opportunities for legislators to communicate with DOT in a formal, recorded way. One is the Statewide Transportation Improvement Program, Amendment Number 2. And so please, if there's thoughts or ideas about where we're going with that document and that funding program, let us know. We listen. We respond. And then also with the long-range plan for the MHS coming out, that'll be another big opportunity. And I'm hopeful maybe some of these concerns, Chairman, that you've brought up with, you know, the future funding levels and things can be addressed through that document as well, so we could have a real plan. So that's another one. But, yeah, appreciate being here today.
Hey, well, thanks for coming today. The Finance Committee is standing by to help be part of the solution to get the projects on the street and keep things moving around the state while we work through our budget dilemma here at the table. But we want to be part of the solution. So if you need things shuffled around a little bit in your organization or other adjustments that needs a budgetary component, just let us know. We're willing to help.
Thank you.
Okay, with that, that'll conclude today. But tomorrow at 9 a.m., we'll start a two-day process of public testimony on the operating budget, the capital budget, and the mental health budget. And I will hopefully have enthusiastic participation from committee members to help with their own areas of the state and other areas of the state that where we have a potential gap because someone's not here or area not represented. So we'll move the gavel around the next couple of days and work through the public hearing process. With that, we are adjourned at 11:57 or 11:56. We are adjourned.